Chapter 13. Peter Beasley knew more about the Foreign Office than any other man in London. As chief librarian in charge of records for over 30 years, he considered the entire history of British international affairs his private domain. He made a specialty of ferreting out policy blunders and scandalous intrigues by diplomats past and present that had been swept under the carpet of secrecy. Beasley ran a hand through a few strands of white hair and reached for one of several pipes littering a large circular tray. He sniffed at the official-looking paper on his desk as a cat might sniff at an uninviting meal. "North American Treaty," he said aloud to the empty room. "Never heard of it." In the minds of his staff, it would have been a pronouncement from God. If Peter Beasley had never heard of a treaty, it obviously did not exist. He lit the pipe and idly watched the smoke. The year 1914 signaled the end of vintage diplomacy, he mused. After World War I, the aristocratic elegance of international negotiation was replaced by mechanical maneuvers. It had become a shallow world indeed. His secretary knocked and poked her head around the door. "Mr. Beasley?" He looked up without really seeing her.
"Yes, Miss Gossett."
"I'm going to lunch now."
"Lunch?"
He took his watch from a vest pocket and gazed at it.
"Oh, yes, I'd lost all track of time. Where are you going to eat? Do you have a date?"
The two unexpected questions in sudden succession caught Miss Gossett by surprise.
"Why, no, I'm eating quite alone. I thought I would try that new Indian restaurant on Glendower Place."
"Good, that settles it," Beasley grandly announced. "You're lunching with me."
The invitation was a rare honor, and Miss Gossett was surprised. Beasley caught her blank expression and smiled.
"I have an ulterior motive, Miss Gossett. You may consider it a bribe. I need you to assist me in searching for an old treaty. Four eyes are faster than two. I don't want to waste too much time on this one."
She barely had time to slip on her coat before he hustled her outside and waved down a taxi with his umbrella. "Sanctuary Building, Great Smith Street," Beasley instructed the driver.
"With five buildings scattered about London, crammed with old Foreign Office records," she said, adjusting a scarf, "it's a mystery to me how you know where to look."
"Correspondents dealing with the Americas during the year 1914 are shelved on the second floor of the East Wing in the Sanctuary Building," he stated flatly.
Properly impressed, Miss Gossett remained silent until they reached their destination. Beasley paid the driver and they entered the lobby, showing their official credentials and signing in with the commissionaire. They took a rickety old elevator to the second floor. He walked unerringly to the correct section.
"You check April. I'll take May."
"You haven't told me what we are looking for," she said inquiringly.
"Any reference to a North American treaty?"
She felt there was more she needed to know, but Beasley had already turned his back and was poring through a huge leather binder that held reams of yellowed official documents and department memoranda. She resigned herself to the inevitable and tackled the first volume of April 1914, wrinkling her nose at the musty odor. After 4 hours, to the accompaniment of Miss Gossett's protesting stomach, they had turned up nothing. Beasley replaced the binders and looked thoughtful.
"Excuse me, Mr. Beasley, but about lunch?"
He looked at his watch.
"I'm dreadfully sorry. I paid no attention to the time. Will you allow me to make that dinner?"
"I gratefully accept," sighed Miss Gossett.
They were signing out when Beasley suddenly turned to the commissionaire. "I'd like to examine the official secrets vault," he said. "My clearance allows me entry."
"But not the young lady," said the uniformed commissionaire, smiling politely. "Her pass only covers the library."
Beasley patted Miss Gossett on the shoulder.
"Please be patient a little longer. This shouldn't take but a few minutes."
He followed the commissionaire down three flights of stairs to the basement and up to a large iron door in a concrete wall. He watched as a pair of heavy brass keys turned the oiled tumblers of two immense antique padlocks without the least sound. The commissionaire pushed the door open and stood aside.
"I'll have to lock you in, sir," he said, parroting the book of regulations. "There is a telephone on the wall. Just ring 3-2 when you wish to leave."
"I'm aware of the procedure, thank you."
The file containing classified matter from the spring of 1914 was only 40 pages thick and held no earth-shattering revelations. Beasley was reinserting it in its slot when he noticed something odd. Several of the files on each side protruded nearly half an inch from the rest of the neatly spaced row. He pulled them out. Another file had somehow been shoved behind the others, keeping them from fitting evenly. He opened the cover. Across the title page of what looked to be a report were the words, North American Treaty. He sat down at a metal table and began to read. 10 minutes later, Beasley had the look of a man who had been tapped on the shoulder in a cemetery at midnight. His trembling hands could scarcely punch out the correct telephone call buttons.